on WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. They are hard to resist, those rankings of American cities. And sometimes we daydream about dropping everything and moving to that place with the great jobs, the affordable housing, the sweet beach or mountain views. You'll find plenty of lists out there. Best places for families, food lovers, bikers, young people, retirees. This hour On Point, best places to live in America, the rankings, and what they tell us. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What do you dream of in a perfect place to live? Have you found it? Does it match up with all the lists out there? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. In just a bit, we will hear from Don Ness, mayor of Duluth, Minnesota, which Outside Magazine in September, just last month, ranked the best town ever. But first, three people who know the rankings, who make them, who know what goes into them. From Santa Fe, New Mexico, John Ogles joins us, associate editor of Outside Magazine. He edited the magazine's Best Town Ever rankings in the September issue. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org in Santa Fe. John Ogles, thanks very much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Tom.
Wonderful to have you. From Chicago, Matt Carmichael is here, editor of Livability.com, which publishes a top 100 cities list, as well as many other rankings, including best places for families, best college towns, best cities for college grads, best downtowns. Matt Carmichael, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks, Tom. Glad to be here.
And from Washington, D.C., Emily Badger joins us. She covers urban policy for The Washington Post. Emily, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Great to be here.
So we've got all kinds of lists here. I want to dive into them and talk with you all about how you put them together. But we've got best town ever right at the top of the heap here. Now, this is from the outdoors person's perspective, John. How do you choose this? Do you put something through a computer and out it pops, or you sit around with a pair of dice and a map of the nation, or you've just got a personal preference from visiting Aunt Sally?
Yeah, we are definitely on the subjective side of things. So we send out a big email to friends and colleagues and, you know, people who mountain bike and kayak and do the kinds of sports that we write about. And then we start compiling the list and making sure the towns are actually places you could afford to live. But chief among the things we're looking at is the ability to get outdoors and be active and do a lot of outdoor adventure type sports.
So here I'm looking at your this is another ranking. Maybe, but your Sweet 16 from outside's perspective. You've got Boulder, Colorado, Ithaca, New York, Duluth, Portland, Maine, Charleston, South Carolina, Anchorage, Alaska, Burlington, Vermont, Missoula, Montana. Are they all happy to be up there? I read somewhere that Missoula didn't want the secret out about what a sweet spot they are.
Well, yeah, it's funny. Some of those towns, you know, like Duluth, they were thrilled to be on the list. And obviously, they won, and so that plays a role into it. But towns like Bozeman, Missoula, Boulder, some of those towns, we'll hear from the readers in those places who say, hey, you know, we already have enough people moving here. Do us a favor and don't mention us going forward so that we don't get any more crowded than we are.
Carmichael, what's your latest listing and who's at the top?
Yeah, we just put out our second annual overall top 100 best places to live, and Madison, Wisconsin comes in at the top of the heap for us.
How does that happen? How does a place like Madison win that trophy spot?
Well, we take kind of a different approach than I guess Outside does. We are a very data-driven list.
Okay.
We, you know, our list takes the better part of a year to put together. We work with a team of researchers from the Martin Prosperity Institute, led by noted urbanist Richard Florida.
Sure.
We have a great board of advisors. We measure 40 different data points. And we also do a big national survey to get a sense of what people in these communities are looking for in quality of place.
So you actually do a kind of crowdsourcing here, asking Americans what they want in a place that they would ideally live.
Exactly. So we're not asking them to say my city is great or that city is great or this city is great. We're asking them what makes your city great. And by doing that, we use that data to weight the different components of our scores.
40 data points for the 100 best places. Give us a sense of some of those data points. What kind of ingredients go in here?
Yeah, we're looking at everything from housing affordability to transportation costs. We're looking at crime and weather. We're looking at the impact of arts and culture in the community. Pretty much anything that, if it involves livability and we can find data to measure it, we will.
I spent a little time living in Madison, Wisconsin. Absolutely adored it. I can see why it would do well on a list like this. Take us on down your, I don't know, top 10 out of that 100. What's it look like?
So we started in Madison and moved to Rochester, Minnesota, Arlington,
this is
Virginia.
Right outside of Minneapolis-St. Paul, Rochester, or nearby?
Yes, okay. Home of the Mayo Clinic.
Oh, right. Okay.
Arlington, Virginia, outside D.C. Mm-hmm. Boulder, Palo Alto, California, in the heart of Silicon Valley. Berkeley, Santa Clara, California, also in the valley. Mm-hmm. Missoula, Montana. Boise, Idaho. And Iowa City, Iowa.
I mean, all great places. These are not the biggest cities. Are you leaving the major metropolitan areas off of your listing?
Correct. We focus on the small to mid-sized cities. So we're at about 20,000 to 350,000 in population.
And when you crown a best city in the country to live in, does its population grow by 4% the next year?
At least. Usually it's more like 10 or 15.
Oh, boy. Emily, what do you think of this whole business of ranking? I mean, they're kind of catnip. It's hard to resist looking. You want to see where your own town or city falls on it. You want to maybe daydream about where you might live or might live one day. What do you think of the undertaking, Emily?
You know, catnip is exactly the expression I was just thinking about because, you know, these lists speak to this desire that we have to compare ourselves to each other and to compare cities to each other. And, you know, those of us who sort of live in urbanist worlds, this is really kind of our favorite parlor game, to rank cities against each other, to talk about which cities have the highest income per capita, to talk about which cities have the most college graduates per capita. So I see these lists all the time. A lot of times I kind of chuckle, though, at the idea that, you know, there could be one definitive list that will tell you exactly where you want to live, partly because, you know, the decision about where to live is such a personal one, and it's based on comparing so many different factors and different priorities, and, you know, I probably wouldn't put Boulder at the top of my list of where I would like to live, or even Duluth or Madison, which sort of speaks to the fact that I might be looking for some different things from what Matt's looking for.
Of course, people care a lot. If you're at the top of the list, people celebrate. If they're at the bottom, my sister-in-law lived in a town, I won't even name it out of pity, but ended up on it was absolutely the bottom of the list, one of these Money Magazine lists a couple years ago. And it just sort of cast a pall over her circle for a couple of months, I would say, after that came out. Like, oh, bummer. Everybody was feeling it, Emily.
Yeah, I mean, they're absolutely conversation starters. I mean, they're conversation starters for readers. They're conversation starters for your friends. And that, you know, comes back to this sort of idea that fundamentally a lot of us are very kind of competitive in thinking about why we love our cities, how much we love our cities, which cities we think our city is better than. And, you know, that cuts both ways when you're looking at this list. Maybe your town is at the top of it and, you know, that gives you sort of a sense of pride. Maybe it's not at the top of it, or you wind up at the top of some list you don't want to be on, yeah, like the least healthy cities in America.
Matt Carmichael, you went into the microfiche and dug out H.L. Mencken from decades and decades ago, maybe the 1920s or 30s. Even back then, Americans were into this. What was he ranking?
Well, the Mencken study, which was published in the American Mercury in, I think, 1931,
okay,
was also a really data-driven approach. And he was looking at state-level data, and he looked at, I think, 140 different data points. And some of them, interestingly, are the same kind of data and the same sources that we'd be using now. So he was using census data, or he was using Nielsen and Arbitron to get it magazine circulation or newspaper circulation or radio ratings.
Now, he was quantifying, I think the headline was, the worst American state. He was going bigger than city or town.
Exactly. And he was also clearly focused on the bottom of the list as opposed to the top.
He included things like lynchings. If you had too many lynchings, it did not help your ranking.
Yeah, there were all sorts of great kind of anachronistic things in his research as well. So he was looking at education, he was looking at income, and he was looking at housing availability, things that we still consider important today. But next to that is, you know, death from niacin deficiency, or as you mentioned, lynching, or the number of distilleries that were seized in your state. All sorts of things that were, I guess, important at that time that thankfully we don't have to worry about too much these days.
Or death rates from typhoid fever, 1931, Mississippi. Death rates, prevalence of lynchings. Emily reported on your findings here. The surprise on the lynching front, surprise leader Wyoming, a terrible kind of metric. Did he have the same attitude toward this? What was he looking for? Was he trying to punish or reward states? Was he trying to guide people where they might want to live, Matt?
Well, I think he was just kind of, I don't know exactly what began it, but I think it was a bit of an academic exercise and also a bit of a way to start looking at the nation in a really data-driven way and I don't think there was a lot of work like that done before he got to it.
Jonah, is your, you know, best places ever, best town ever, is it a hot issue? Does it fly off the shelves? Can you feel Americans wanting to read, know, learn?
Well, it does for us. You know, we've been doing this issue every year for a very long time, and readers love it. And Emily's exactly right. It's about the dream. You know, I don't think our readers are picking up the issue and all moving to Duluth tomorrow. I think they're in places where they think, oh my gosh, I wish I lived in a town like Boulder or Duluth where I could get to a trailhead in 5 minutes out my front door, or where I had, you know, a beach or an ocean or a lake right across the street. And you know, we play up to that. We let readers vote on our contest. So we pick the 64 towns, and then they kind of vote them through an NCAA-style bracket until we have a winner. And in that process, you can really see people are passionate about the places they live or the places they grew up or have visited.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about lists of best places to live in America, best places for families, for foodies, for bicyclers, young people, old people, outdoors people, maybe for you. Jonah Ogles with Outside Magazine is with us from Santa Fe, New Mexico. They've just put out a big list of, you know, best town ever is what they put on it. And people eat it up. Provo, Utah is high. What else? La Crosse, Wisconsin did pretty well. In Boulder, Colorado, Missoula, Montana, Anchorage, Alaska. Minneapolis did all right. Duluth, top of the list. We'll talk with their mayor in a few minutes here, Don Ness. Jonah Ogles is with us from Santa Fe. Matt Carmichael's with us from livability.com. They just put together a great big list of best of the best, 100. And at the top, Madison, Wisconsin. Emily Badger's with us from the Washington Post. She covers urban policy. We're looking at what goes into these lists, what they tell us about what we desire, about the places we live. You can join us. Madison did very well with livability.com. Number one out of 100. Here's a video from the city explaining its allure.
Nestled amid the natural landscape is downtown Madison, an isthmus alive with music, art, and, according to local lore, more restaurants per capita than any American city.
But everybody's competing. Here's Boulder, Colorado, named one of 16 finalists in Outside Magazine's rankings, number four on the Livability.com's 2015 Top 100 rankings. Here's a video from Boulder, Colorado, USA.com about the dining scene.
We're more than just a little bit in love with food. Fresh food. And great beer.
and choirs singing in the background. Jonah, Matt, Emily, lots of callers for you. Peter in Santa Fe, New Mexico. No mean town. Peter, thank you for calling.
Hi, I was just wondering. Hi, Tom. Hi. I was wondering, I just tried to change my question a little bit. You said that, just had that thing, Madison, Wisconsin had more restaurants per capita.
That's what they claimed there. I don't know. That's their video.
I'm sure Santa Fe has more restaurants.
Okay. Santa Fe pride. Okay.
But that's not really why I called.
Yeah.
The New York Times had a statistical thing, an upshot a couple of weeks, months ago, talking about the worst places in America. And it came up with some place, some coal town in Kentucky. I apologize. I don't remember what it is. I don't know what it's in front of me. But then later, a week or two later, they came back and said, well, using the same criteria, coming up with the best town in America, they came up with Los Alamos. And I'm just really wondering why a place like Santa Fe or Los Alamos, which has fantastic outdoors, beautiful weather, and great culture, doesn't make it on any of the lists.
Well, let me go to the list makers and see. Santa Fe and Los Alamos, let's take an outdoor angle first. Jonah, you're in Santa Fe. Where do they fall, if, on your lists?
Yeah, well, you know, they were not on our list this year, but
you're in Peter's doghouse now, and he's near you there in Santa Fe. So.
Yeah, and I'm a huge fan of Santa Fe. Obviously, I live here. I could live here the rest of my life and be quite happy. But you know, for us, it's about getting more towns into the mix. You know, Santa Fe was on our list a couple of years ago, and so we just haven't really returned to it. So, you know, that's one of either the advantages or disadvantages of not being data focused is that we're just kind of picking and choosing, trying to spread the love around and show just how many great towns there are in this country.
Also, some cities and towns may not compete as hard, right? I mean, you had Provo and Anchorage really duking it out here, rallying their people to vote. You've got a bracket with votes here. Maybe Santa Fe and Los Alamos are so confident they don't vote.
Well, yeah, who knows? We may have to throw them on the list next year and see. But you're definitely right. The passion of a town comes out in our bracket system because Provo came out of nowhere. I think in the first round we had them up against Jackson Hole, and we thought, oh, you know, Jackson Hole is like one of the prettiest places in the country, especially for outdoor enthusiasts. And out of nowhere, Provo just showed up. They got the votes out, and they just marched all the way through to the finals.
We've got a caller from livability.com's number one city in the country, Madison, Wisconsin. Brennan is calling. Hi, Brennan. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, I'm the editor of Madison Magazine, and we do these lists.
Honored to have you calling. Well, what do you think, Brennan?
Well, it's interesting because in Madison, Wisconsin, we've been ranked the best place to live and the worst place to live if you are an African American. So we're having all of these very interesting conversations and dialogues about what that means for our city, because we're struggling right now with these racial disparities and all of these issues. And at the same time, we have, you know, a national reputation as being a great place to live. So it's just an interesting time for us right now.
So when you see that number one ranking, I suppose you understand what they're getting at, but what there are wrinkles here, too. If it's the worst place for African Americans, that's not exactly a great placard out front, Brennan.
Yeah, and you know, it's very difficult because we have African American leaders and leaders in the Latino community who are saying, you know, that's all fine and well if you're privileged, if you're white, if you can afford all these great things. But you know, we have 50% of our schools, 50% of the kids in our schools are non-white, and we're struggling with an achievement gap as cities are all over the country. So it's just really interesting. While we are a fantastic place to live, it's my job to cover the city and all of its assets, we have some challenges. And I think when the outside folks come in, and not Outside Magazine, but just in general, and it just causes turmoil here right now. But at the same time, you know, we love getting these rankings. The mayor, you know, releases press releases about it, and, you know, we get all excited. But it's just... It's a difficult thing for us right now, and we're working through it as a city.
Matt Carmichael, Brennan, stand by. Matt, there you've got the editor of Madison Magazine saying thank you very much, but we've got some problems here too. Do you worry that you just glide over some pretty big details in these rankings? Not details, I guess. Big factors, Matt.
Well, yeah, I think you certainly see that some of these cities have challenges. I mean, I don't think there's any arguing that. There are a number of metrics we try to take that into account. And we're looking at diversity, and we're looking at income disparities, and we're looking at opportunities, and we're looking at the quality of the public school system. You know, Madison does very well for a large portion of its population, and I was in Madison to announce the list. I spent a lot of time with Mayor Soglin there. And yes, there are certainly some issues in Madison. I know that the mayor is very committed. I have never heard a mayor talk so much about equity and about the need to be addressing those concerns. And also, they did also just come up with the Brookings Institution did a ranking of cities with the most concentrated poverty. Mm. And Madison showed up at the bottom of that. They had the least concentrated poverty of any metro area in the U.S. or any major metro area in the U.S. So there are different ways of measuring these things. There are different needs that different communities have. And, you know, I think with both the lists, we're trying to address that, and we're trying to encourage cities to be having these discussions.
I guess no place is perfect by any means. I've loved Madison for a long time, since a college summer there. But Brennan, you keep it real for us, and I appreciate that. It's an honor to have you call in, Brennan, at Madison Magazine. Thanks for calling, Brennan.
Thank you.
Here's a little sound from Duluth, Minnesota, at the Top of the Pops with Outdoors Magazine, a video from visitduluth.com.
You can play hard in Duluth, too. Rollerblade for 60 miles. You can go uphill, downhill, jump rocks, or simply enjoy the scenery, along the various trails. It'll all leave you breathless.
We've got the mayor of Duluth with us right now. Don Ness joins us, mayor of Duluth, Minnesota. He was first elected mayor in 2012. Outside Magazine ranked Duluth best town ever in its September 24 rankings. Don Ness, Mayor Ness, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
Rollerblade for 60 miles. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm breathless just thinking about it.
Well, we are proud of the kind of the diversity of outdoor recreation opportunities in our city. You know, Duluth is a beautiful city, kind of built on a hill overlooking the greatest of the Great Lakes and Lake Superior, and we're not only kind of taking full advantage of what we have today, but we're furthering our investment and looking to add more miles of trails and more outdoor recreation opportunities all the time.
You've got a lot already. 86,000 residents there, stretching 26 miles along the westernmost tip of Lake Superior. Almost 7,000 acres of city parkland, 178 miles of wooded trails. Did it matter, Mayor Ness, Don Ness, to you for Outside Magazine to put you at number one?
Oh, no question. You know, Duluth is a city that isn't necessarily in those conversations on a regular basis because of the focus on major metropolitan or areas in the larger cities like Madison. So this was a way for us to really highlight, you know, what makes Duluth unique, what makes Duluth special, and make our appeal to, you know, not to 99% of the population, but to the 5% of the population that want a life experience that has an adventurous side. And that's the type of person that we wanted to attract to the city of Duluth, and Outside Magazine is right in our wheelhouse.
Jonah, you put it, you and your colleagues, and I guess voters, put it at the top of the list, but you say in your write-up that a lot of your staff aren't sure they would want to live there. Why not, Jonah?
Well, you know, it's a very cold place, you know, and so we're kind of spoiled living in Santa Fe because we get sun, you know, 300 days out of the year. But I will say we actually have a lot of Midwesterners on staff, a lot of us who grew up in the Dakotas,
they can
Wisconsin.
Deal with it.
Yeah. You know, I grew up in Michigan, and Duluth to me is like, you know, that's a great place. I can cross country ski for, you know, a whole weekend if I want to and never cover the same trails. You know, Duluth has a ton going for it. Great foodie scene. That's the thing that really surprised me was just how much kind of non-outdoor activity draw there was, how much of a draw for the other things like food and good breweries and things like that.
Mayor Ness, elected in 2007, I should correct myself. When mayors get together, do you poke each other about your rankings? These bragging rights? Do you give each other the, you know, ribbing about where you stand?
Well, I think mayors always keep it in context. I mean, it's wonderful when you have the ranking that you can hold up and say, you know, here's something good happening in our community. But we also understand that depending on you know, the next ranking could have you further down just by the numbers that folks take out. But you know, there is a healthy rivalry, and you know, even in the state of Minnesota, for example, I came out and claimed Duluth as the craft beer capital of Minnesota, and every time I see the mayors of St. Paul and Minneapolis, I like to, you know, give them a hard time about that. Right. But you know, they come back just as strong.
Mayor Don Ness, mayor of Duluth, Minnesota, at the top of Best Town Ever rankings in Outside Magazine's September issue. Mayor Ness, thanks for being with us for a minute. Great to have you here.
Right. Thanks, Tom.
We are looking at lists of best places to live in America, but on all kinds of rankings, best places for families, foodies, bicyclers. If it's families you're interested in, oh, let's see, I'm trying to find my way around these lists right now. Well, here, well, most walkable, then we get big, New York City, San Francisco, Boston, Philadelphia, Miami, Chicago. What, best cities for kids, Boise, Idaho, Downers Grove, Illinois, Overland, Kansas, Cedar Rapids, Iowa, Plano, Texas. Money Magazine best places, McKinney, Texas, Maple Grove. We'll look at how they put that together. Emily, let me ask you, do you think these lists push cities and towns to be better?
Well, I think, like the mayor of Duluth just mentioned, it's absolutely the case that officials and mayors and local tourism boards will cite these lists, will promote these lists. You know, these are sort of a badge of honor for them, and it helps them to promote themselves to tourists and to people who might want to move there. And, you know, in my experience, I don't think I have ever met anyone who has used one of these lists to decide where to live, but I have met lots of officials and mayors who've used these lists to talk about their cities, even to talk about their cities to their cities. I mean, one great example that I always think of is that Mick Cornett, who's the mayor of Oklahoma City, tells this great story about how when he saw Oklahoma City at the top of one of these lists for fattest cities in America, you know, that was really sort of a moment of pause for him. And it made him kind of stop and rethink how his city was viewed around the country and prompted this whole health campaign that they had in Oklahoma City. So, you know, there's an example of a slightly different kind of list from the best cities ones that we're talking about. But I think it did sort of promote something of a conversation in the city there. And you know, I wouldn't be surprised if that happens in a number of places. I think that's perhaps a likely more productive outcome of these lists than lots of people actually making decisions about where to live based on them.
It was a poke in the ribs or the love handle there for one city to maybe do better. John in Austin, Texas. That's been a hot name, hot town for a long time now. John, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Oh, thanks, Tom. Hi, how are you?
Very well.
Good. Well, yeah, we have been a hot town for a long time, and I tell you what, I got some advice for the people in Madison and Duluth and places like that, and that is get out right now, leave.
What do you mean, John?
Because Austin has been at the top of these lists for maybe 10, 15, 20 years.
Right.
And it is no longer what it was. It is now the 11th largest city in the United States. It's no longer the slacker capital of the world. It's no longer the weirdest city in the United States.
Which it long took great pride in.
It is no longer what it was. It has now the number one worst traffic in the world. And I have a Republican congressman. That would never have happened in the good days.
So you've got the curse of admiration. You say if you rank high, get out, because what? The flood is coming in behind of people.
Because what makes you great is all the people that are not there.
John, I think a lot of people will be shaking their heads and know what you mean. I wish you well in finding all the things about Austin, winkling them out that you love. I mean, Matt, is it the curse of a good ranking that you're laying down on people here?
Oh, I absolutely hope so.
What do you mean by that? John's not too happy about what's happened to his town, by his measure. Matt?
Hi, I'm sorry I lost you there for a moment.
Yeah, no, John's not too happy about it. In Austin, what do you mean you hope so? If it sends in the deluge, and the deluge takes away the very things that made it so attractive in the first place, I'm not sure that's going to be seen as a great deal. I got a problem with my connection to Matt. I don't know why. Matt, we'll get to you. Moki in Basie, Virginia. Moki, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
Well, I guess I make a left turn because I don't live in a big city. I live way up in the mountains in Virginia on the West Virginia border.
Okay.
And I've tried for 50 years to get here. Finally made it. It's a great place if you're retired. It's very affordable. Of course, it's beautiful and has the Four Seasons, which appeals to me. And I find that the people are so kind and so genuine here.
How did you find it? How did you spot this as the place you wanted to be, Moki?
Well, I found it by accident. I was just driving around looking at the countryside one day and ended up somehow in Basie. And I thought, well, what a beautiful place. This is the place I've always dreamed of living. And it's kind of wild. We have bear and deer and snakes and fox, and it's a learning experience for me. But I lived with my family in Saudi for several years in the 60s and 70s.
Back from Saudi Arabia, now in Basie, Virginia. We hear the wonder of it. Moki found it by driving around. A lot of people find it by lists. We're looking at those lists. Moki, thanks for calling. We're up against a break here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about lists of best places to live in America, best places for families, foodies, bicyclers, young people, old people, outdoors people, with Emily Badger of The Washington Post, Jonah Ogles, associate editor at Outside Magazine, with us from Santa Fe, New Mexico, Matt Carmichael in Chicago, editor of livability.com. Here's a little sound from Charleston, South Carolina, putting on the dog for you here. They're among the top 16 in Outside Magazine's Best Town Ever rankings, but only made it to number 92 on livability.com's top 100 for 2015. This is from Charleston's Convention Visitors Bureau.
first start with seeing the historic district.
In 1931, the people who were concerned with preservation and with preserving Charleston's ambiance persuaded the mayor and city council to pass an ordinance creating an old and historic district. In the history of preservation in the United States, this is a unique thing, or at least it's a first.
Okay, there's Charleston, South Carolina, great town. Matt, Jonah, how can it be top of your list, Matt, and bottom of yours, Jonah? Matt, can you hear me there?
I can indeed.
So you're bottom of your list, top of Jonah's nearly or way up there.
Well, I wouldn't say it's the bottom of our list.
92, that's not exactly screaming.
But we're ranking more than 2,000 cities.
Okay. So
these are all
good.
In the top 5%.
Oh, well, like, okay. That's a different
any
story.
Of the yeah, exactly. Any of the 100 cities that we are listing would be getting A's in most classrooms. So, you know, being 92 versus being 16 versus being 64, these are all great places to live.
Okay.
And depending on your tastes,
yeah.
Pick any of them.
Jonah, what puts Charleston, up so high on your list?
Well, I mean, first of all, it's right on the ocean there and one of the great East Coast surf towns in the country. But what really stands out about Charleston to us is all of the other stuff. It's just a great place to live. I mean, phenomenal food scene. So many, you know, James Beard Award nominated chefs and things like that matter to our readers. So that's stuff we take into consideration. But what was interesting, you know, we tried to do this kind of back end data thing where we were looking at miles of bike trails and public spaces and things like that. And Charleston actually didn't score so well on that because it's such an old city and it's hard to find the space for green spaces and bike lanes and things like that.
We've got all kinds of lists. Livability.com for best foodie cities. New Haven, Connecticut, number one. Scottsdale, Arizona, number two. Boston, number three. Asheville, North Carolina. Traverse City, Michigan. Traverse City. Berkeley, Boulder, Burlington, Vermont. Omaha, Nebraska. Or let's say cities for new college grads. Cambridge, Massachusetts, just across the river here, number one. Bellevue, Washington, number two. Austin, Texas, doing well there, still number three. Bethesda, Minneapolis, Hoboken, Ann Arbor. Best for new college grads. How do you calculate that, Matt?
Well, for our monthly top 10 lists, those have a little more art to the science. So we are definitely starting with a data-driven approach, and we factor in different things depending on which group we're talking about. So for best cities for new grads, we're looking at places that have a high number of people in that kind of 25 to 34 age group. Like, are people in those ages hanging around in these towns? Are there good job opportunities? Are there good recreational opportunities? And we skew the list a little more than our overall top 100 toward that age group and the things they're going to be looking for in life.
Best, most gay-friendly cities. This is from Vocative.com. Los Angeles, New York, San Francisco, Des Moines, Chicago, Seattle, Albany. What about, identity, sexuality rankings? Do you do those, Matt?
We haven't yet. That was actually something we were considering this year. There's some things that are just kind of hard to get data across, especially the small to mid-sized cities that we're looking at. And we can scale across as many cities as we tend to look at.
It's funny, looking at responses here, you ask people what they think, what makes a city or a town best, and, you know, there is a lot of hometown pride here. Here's a listener who just says, being NYC, done, you know, end of story, that's all it takes. But livability.com parses out many different ways. Bicycling's best cities to bike, Minneapolis, Portland, Boulder, Seattle, Eugene, Oregon, San Francisco, then back to Madison. Then New York's on there, Tucson, Chicago, Austin, Texas. There are some warnings here, Emily, from our listeners as well. Rajesh writes, Cape Coral, of course, in Florida, was number three, Forbes best town in 2004-05. 3 years later, 90% of homes values underwater and unemployment over 20%. No guarantees here, Emily.
Oh, no, that's absolutely true. And I mean, cities are these sort of living organisms that change over time. And, you know, our tastes change over time, too. This comes back to the example of the kind of Mencken exercise that Matt was talking about earlier, you know, where he's talking about ranking cities based on these criteria that were important to Americans in the 1930s that aren't necessarily important to us now. I mean, I think part of the reason why this is somewhat of a fraught exercise is because not only are individual preferences and priorities different, but it's also the case that those preferences and priorities priorities change over time and cities change over time, too. I mean, Florida is a perfect example of a place where if you were looking for really, you know, if you were looking for a great booming housing market in the mid-2000s, that was the place to go. But fast forward a couple of years, you know, that's not so much the case anymore. And that's a great example of the fact that, you know, there's so many variables here that are moving. And I also think it's true that if you're in the business of producing these lists, you can't put the same cities at the top of them every year. Otherwise, you know, it's not interesting. What's the point of looking at them? So it's certainly in the interest, I think, of a lot of the media outlets and the groups that produce them to sort of think about the criteria a little bit different and move cities around whether or not what's changing on the ground is really changing as well.
So plenty of room for buyer beware here as you go. Bridget in New Orleans. Thanks for calling, Bridget. We haven't heard New Orleans yet this hour. What do you think, Bridget?
Hi, Tom. I think New Orleans definitely deserves to be on at least the top half of these lists.
Make your case, Bridget. Let's hear it. We were down recently, and I know that New Orleans, all these years after Katrina, is riding a lot of civic pride lately. Let's hear your case.
So we have the best food in the world, and as far as restaurants per capita, I really don't see where any other city can hold a candle to us. We have all of the different festivals all year long, Jazz Fest, Mardi Gras, French Quarter Fest. We have parties for just about everything. There's all of the different music and culture and, I mean, funk and jazz and blues and all of that lovely music. And we have a burgeoning tech sector. We're the home of Hollywood South. We have a huge medical complex going up in the middle of Mid-City. I mean,
yes.
So much going on right now.
Bridget, let us pick it up right here in New Orleans. There's the case for it, Matt. Where does it fall in your rankings? How do you look at it?
New Orleans is too big for us.
Oh, you go smaller than that in general.
We do. It's just outside our bubble, and it's certainly something that we would consider on our monthly top 10 list, but for our overall top 100, it's just outside our range.
It's got a lot of magic going on there. One more caller from New Orleans, McKellab. McKellab, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I read the article in Outside Magazine and really enjoyed it. Unlike your previous caller, I was kind of surprised that New Orleans didn't make any of the rankings, but I do understand it now. That was a great promotional call for the city. But I guess
Oh, I lost you there, McKellab. I just lost you when you came to your point. I see a note here that McKellab was talking about seasonality and where the climate's good and whether it's good all year round or not. Does climate come into your rankings, Jonah?
Well, you know, it does a little bit. I mean, obviously we had towns like Duluth on our list and Houghton, Michigan was on our early bracket, places where, you know, you just have to be able to deal with winter for 7-8 months out of the year. But we're more focused on those places that have those types of activities. And actually, you know, Emily mentioned Oklahoma City earlier and also talked about how we can't just recycle the same towns. And that's something we struggle with. But we are definitely aware of kind of those policy shifts. Oklahoma City was on our list last year, actually, in large part because we saw the effort they had made to install more pathways through the city. You know, Little Rock, Arkansas is one that's kind of on our radar right now because there's a clear commitment in that city to improving those types of opportunities. And you know, so that's kind of where the policy stuff comes into what we look at. And we notice that a lot with these cities is that's the thing they have in common is a civic commitment to open spaces and trails and things like that.
Here's another sort of what the heck note from a listener at the website. To you, I guess, Jonah, how could there, or both you and Matt, how could there be two different Vermont towns listed in Outside Magazine's top 16, but none in Livability's top 100? I guess that's mainly to you, Matt. They're right up there and outside and nowhere in your 100. What about it? Vermont wants to know.
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, one of the problems is that this is a very data-driven list, and some of the factors do seem to favor certain states versus others. Whenever people come to me and say that I have some sort of massive bias against their state or in favor of, say, California that does well on our list, I at least can fall back on the fact that I live in Illinois and there are no Illinois cities either. you know, I would
no
love
bias.
To be able to weight the scales, and I would love to have my hometown be at the top of the list, but The data just doesn't support it entirely.
Vermont pride, though, right there. Bob in Belmont, Massachusetts. Bob, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Have your guests taken into account environmental issues when they make up these lists? I'm thinking about climate change, global warming. The Southwest, they got water problems. Colorado got oil and gas exploration, fracking. They're talking about developing a pristine mountain wilderness for coal mining. So, you know, some of these things, I don't see these issues brought up in any of these lists. I mean, I'm looking at the Money Magazine list and, you know, so forth. So I'm just wondering what your guess, how they factor in some of these issues.
Environmental awareness is a great question, Bob. I mean, look out 40, 50 years. Matt, are you factoring that in? That there was a time when the South and Southwest had got all these accolades. But who knows what's going to happen with climate on that front? We got some drought already. Does that come into your calculation, Matt?
Well, I think one way it comes in, besides we do look at climate, we do look at CO2 emissions in a city. But I think our list also values the cities that are kind of leading the way and are the kind of cities that are going to become more sustainable and help us avoid some of the climate change. So cities where not to be driving their cars all the time, cities with a more compact and dense framework so that people can not be quite as sprawled and not spend so much time commuting, places with options for public transportation. And so looking at these infrastructure issues, I think we're finding cities that will actually help us with climate change. And it's good to see the mayors of a lot of these cities and people addressing that at the city level when maybe, say, at the federal level, we're not getting quite as much action.
Great to see that as one angle of competition, if that's what we've got here for good rankings on these lists. Bob, thanks for your call. We're looking at best places to live by lots of different angles and measures. Let's go to Anthony in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Anthony, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I was just calling because what makes a good city for me is a lot of history. That's why I moved to Murfreesboro. It has Stones River Battlefield. I hike around that battlefield almost every day, and I'm actually thinking of moving up to Salem, Massachusetts because of the history up there.
Yeah, they've got plenty. The right season for that with witches and all the rest. Have you moved around, Anthony? What have you found places that didn't have a high enough history quotient for you?
I actually grew up in Big Bear, California. It's a small ski resort town down in Southern California. And it had a lot of wakeboarding, snowboarding, a lot of bicycling and hiking, and I loved it. But I eventually got bored because I did everything there.
You did it all and need a little history to back you up. I can see, I know a lot of people for whom that's very important. Of course, you've got plenty of cities who have that. You've got others who don't have as much. And then there's cost. On Twitter, Carrie writes to us. She says, the best places are like that until you pay for them. Hashtag Seattle, hashtag SF San Francisco, hashtag Hawaii. What about it, Matt? Cost. Are these impossibly expensive places just to be?
Well, I think affordability is a challenge for most cities at the moment. But we tend to measure affordability not in terms of least expensive, but in terms of how the costs and the income kind of weigh against each other. So, yes, places like Silicon Valley can do well on our list, but there are also plenty more affordable places like, say, Grand Rapids, Michigan. And to your earlier caller's point, we have places like Charleston that have great history.
And not everybody's moving just for savoring the pleasure of it. I mean, people move because they need jobs, too. Money, best places to find a new job. They've got Sugar Land, Texas, Flower Mound, Texas, Carmel, Indiana, Allen, Texas. Lots of, sounds like plenty of energy industry there. Highlands Ranch, Colorado, Franklin, Tennessee, Bossier City, Louisiana, and right on down. What do you think, Emily? Overall, are we moving in a good direction? We heard a caller say, you know, the federal government's not working here. Maybe local governments are the ones who are taking the lead on some of these fronts, making better places to live. Does that make judging by locale a good way? Is that a good dynamic for us to piece by piece try and move things forward, Emily?
Yeah, I mean, I think that cities are intensely conscious of the fact that they all want to grow their population and they want to lure new workers in. They want families to move in. You know, this is a big issue even in a city like Washington where we have lots of young people, but we don't have a lot of families who live here. And, you know, cities are very conscious of sort of what other communities are doing. How do they compare to other communities? You know, what could Washington do in order to convince more young families that they want to live here? What could Chicago do to increase increase, you know, more minorities who've been moving out to the suburbs to move back into the city. You know, their cities, a lot more so than the federal government, are intensely responsive to decisions that people make with their feet about where they want to move. And so I think, you know, they have to pay attention to the things that, that people are saying are important to them and where they want to live. But I also sort of suspect that at the end of the day, a lot of the criteria that we're talking about are, you know, these are parts of how we daydream about cities. But really, most of us make decisions about where to live at the end of the day based on where we can find a job and whether or not we have family living somewhere who will provide sort of a support network for us. And so, you know, I think this is another big piece of what cities are mostly focused on is, you know, how to create jobs, how to have strong economies, because that's a big part of what people will make their decisions on.
And of course, family and family history matter here, too. We saw numbers saying Americans just weren't moving as much during the recession. Are we out of that now, Emily, or not?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it used to be that the American family moved every 7 years or so, and now it's about 8.5 years. So it's definitely true that fewer of us are making this decision quite as often as we used to about where to pick up and go.
But the daydreaming goes on, really never stops for a lot of people, and it's so interesting to see what's put out on the platter for us. Emily Badger at the Washington Post, it's been wonderful to have you with us this hour. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Jonah Ogles in Santa Fe, New Mexico at Outside Magazine. A lot of fun reading through your list. Thanks for bringing it to us, Jonah.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Tom.
And Matt Carmichael at Livability.com. Matt, good luck and thanks for being here.
Thanks, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.